And what time and what you want to do?
So the event starts at 10 a.m. And during the event, we are going to give short biographies of all of the victims of the massacre and then a moment of silence for the victims. And then after the event, we will just walk back into the school and resume classes.
Great. Monica Chang, Sarah Wells Moran, congratulations on leading this effort, and we wish you well and hope everything works out really well, and we want you to be safe in school, and we'd like to see some of these controls come in quickly.
For sure. We hope so as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Kyle.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Limp Wrist. Live Friday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Bossa Nova Ballroom, 722 East Burnside Street in Portland. Limp Wrist, four unruly, lewd queens playing hardcore call for all dykes, rough girls, sissy boys, trans folks, letter T.O.s, fierce queens, punks, the non-defined and the questioning, to come get loose at their only Northwest show. Also playing are Xylitol from Olympia and Portland's Labinden Toten and Petite. Again, that's Limp Wrist, live Friday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Bossa Nova Ballroom, 722 East Burnside Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Girl.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Enough National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School in Portland. Enough is calling for students, teachers, school administrators, parents, and allies to take part in the National School Walkout for 17 minutes to protest Congress's inaction in response to gun violence. Again, that's Enough National School Walkout on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 a.m. at Roseway Heights School, 7334 Northeast Siskiyou Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Is 6:03 and you're listening to KBOO Portland, and coming up next is Preference Radio.
of preference, dear listeners. This is your host, Alan, or you can call me Hedda. Thanks for being here with us. I want to update you on a couple of workshops that Pacific Northwest College of Art is holding this week. One with Maggie Nelson, one with Harry Dodge, and one next week hosted by Shayla Lawson. Then that workshop is actually about working with Maggie Nelson's text, Bluets. So head to PNC's website or give them a call. Find out about these great workshops. Maggie Nelson, Harry Dodge, and Shayla Lawson. Very exciting. Later today, we're going to talk with Dominic Lopez about the upcoming Queer Town Hall with local legislators. But to start with, we have Babatunde Azabuke of Enlace with us.
Enlace.
Enlace. Thank you very much. Welcome. Thanks for being here with us.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. My name is Babatunde. Pronouns are he, she, and Z. Just switch it up. That's all I ask. I am the lead organizer and trainer for Enlace PDX. Recently, I feel like a recent transplant here to Portland, but I've been here like a year, originally from Athens, Georgia, and did a lot of organizing down south. So
wonderful. Well, why don't you tell us about Enlace?
Yeah, Enlace is an organization that's been around, I want to say roughly about 20 years. And mainly we do work around strategic alliance. Enlace is a strategic alliance of low-wage worker centers, unions, and community organizations in Mexico and the U.S. We support, you know, our member organizations through capacity building and strategic campaigning. We also work to create cross-border and multiracial coalitions across sectors to build stronger international people's movement for self-determination. And hopefully the work that we're doing will kind of tip the power balance back in favor of the working class. So
wonderful. Could you tell us, Babatunde, about some of that work across borders, how that plays out?
Yeah, so Enlace actually got started organizing workers down in Mexico around a campaign geared towards Sara Lee. The workers down there were experiencing, you know, a lot of issues around getting breaks and getting their needs met and things like that. So the organization really kind of like came to fruition at that initial campaign down in Mexico. And so currently our work is more focused on the national work here in the U.S., basically around Freedom Cities as well, which is our current campaign, as well as the Prison Divest.
And by Freedom Cities, you mean?
So Freedom Cities is a new campaign that actually came out of a lot of the mess that happened around the last election, where people were wandering around something more than sanctuary cities, because sanctuary cities only address one issue mm-hmm. for a lot of folks. So Freedom Cities is kind of like an umbrella where a lot of different campaigns can come out of and be part of that movement around climate justice, workers' rights, gender justice, racial justice, and all of those things. So it's really a movement not centered on one issue. We're trying to build like a huge movement based off of a lot of people's struggles that people can unite under.
Is Portland a freedom city?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that is yet to really be said. I think that there is a lot of work to be done around the experiences that a lot of the marginalized communities here face. I mean, this is the whitest city in the nation. So there's definitely a lot of work to be done. I think to label it a freedom city is a bit preemptive. I think that, you know, once things the tide starts to turn a little bit, where people who are most marginalized and most vulnerable to state and corporate violence are getting their needs met, then maybe.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you were to Yeah, if you were to imagine what that would look like, just locally, because that's enough and a lot. What would you like to see that look like for Portland and the folks in Portland and greater Portland?
I think the first and foremost thing would be to an end to the overdevelopment that's happening here for a lot of folks. A lot of folks who are in the programs that we offer, and also just in community, especially communities of color, you know, undocumented communities, are really under attack by just not even having a place to safely lay their head consistently, you know, because there are no-cause evictions that happen where people basically, even they've been living there for like 10, 15, 20 years, like, you know, as soon as that property gets bought up, then they're out on the street with no support, you know. And I think that would be the biggest start, I think, you know. I have to say that, you know, we have a major houseless problem down in Atlanta as well. I think that it feels a bit more urgent out here, I think, just because of the demographics that are out here, because the people that you see on the street are folks who are, you know, trans, GNC, you know, folks that have mental health needs that are not being met, you know, and people who are families. There are whole families on the street. So I think that's a major issue. I think that would be really, really great if we could address that first, as well as the over-policing of our Black and Brown communities, for sure.
I think for housing, one of the subjects I hear so little discussed in Portland is discrimination in rentals. I remember speaking with someone, I think he worked for the county, this was a couple of years ago, and he did, you know, testing of, you know, who rented to whom. And there were very few, of course, there were very few folks working on it. The city issued a report a couple of years ago, and we never heard anything more about it. I know there are ways to create sort of uniform, blind testing, not testing, rental history checks, credit checks, whatever folks need to do. And without that, the rental market is tilted in a way that's, I think, is really scary.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I know that there's a lot of folks that I have come across just in the year that I've been here who have definitely spoken to experiencing discrimination in, like, the housing sector, especially, you know, it's one thing to have a phone call and then you go in to fill out the paperwork and they're like, ooh, you know, and that happens a lot more than people would actually think. You know, and it's not just, it's race, it's also sexuality, mental health status, class, all of those things, you know.
Wonderful. So NLACE has created this We Rise program.
Yes. We Rise is actually a next iteration of a program that NLACE did a couple years ago. When they were doing more of the binational work, Women Rise, which was for women, cisgendered and trans, to come and build together and learn. And they were bringing in folks from, like, all over, and, like, you know, all over the nation, as well as folks from South America and Mexico, which is really dope. And so I think that by the time that I started engaging with We Rise, NLACE has decided to, like, kind of focus more on the local work here in PDX and Metro. And I actually participated the first year as a facilitator. So this program is really to kind of bridge a gap within the organizing circles that exist. You know, we hopefully enter these spaces and hoping that we'll be fully seen in our identity and who we are. But a lot of times there's a lot of, like, really, really problematic micro and macro aggressions that happen that really kind of keep people, you know, out of the pathway of leadership ultimately. So this program is really dedicated to building with folks who are either affiliated with organizations that are doing campaign work, or just liberatory work in general, or folks who are just kind of like free-floating activists. So this is like women of color, trans folks of color, gender nonconforming folks of color coming together to kind of like unite around a lot of the similar struggles that we face as non-men, you know, non-cis men. And so within this space, we also focus a lot on healing. And what that tends to look like is we do a lot of like guided meditation together, a lot of centering and grounding and kind of unpacking some of the trauma that we've gone through in these spaces, trying to do freedom work. And so we spend, like I said, doing meditation. We also do yoga. We also like engage in like a lot of different activities outside of that. So in this last cohort, folks have gone on to start consulting, healing consulting businesses. Other folks have gone on to participate in different pockets of work that they would not have been connected to without WeRise. So it's super exciting. And there's like a large age range of folks, from youth to folks that are on up in 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, folks who maybe don't speak English. And so we always try to accommodate whatever needs people have around like childcare and transportation support and interpretation, making sure we feed people, you know, and really, really cultivating like a community of resistance within communities of resistance.
Wonderful. What, Babatunde, tell us the details.
Mm-hmm.
When does this play out? Are there open slots?
Yes, absolutely. We are actually accepting applications for WeRise right now. The applications, you will have to go to info at enlace.org if you are interested in applying. As far as the dates, the first training is going to take place on April 28th as well as April 29th. Both of those trainings are from 10 to 5. After that, there will be a barbecue July 14th that is open for folks who participate. And then following that is a day of action dedicated to the Night Out for Safety and Liberation, which is on August 7th, and then a final training October 13th and 14th from 10 to 5 as well. And this cohort is like a year long this time. So it's gone through a couple of changes, but I think that for the goals that we have and really digging in with that community, a year is probably going to be sufficient for that. So super exciting.
And does the year of study, what are its themes?
Right. So in Lhasa, in the year that everything happened and everything was created, we have created our own methodology called the Integrated Organizing Approach, which is basically an approach to organizing that centers around alliances and internal and external strategies, and all of those things working in tandem. So as folks are coming into this cohort, we're going to be kind of digging in and teaching them a little bit about that. Well, not a little bit, all of the methodology around that, so that folks can apply that in different areas of their work, or they can plug into other folks who are applying that into their work.
Wonderful. Just to change tacks for a moment. Actually, I'll just let folks know you're listening to Preference. I'm Alan, your host. We're talking about Enlace's program, WeRise, but I want to take a moment and see if you can give us some information about Enlace's private prison divestment campaign.
Absolutely. Yeah. So last year, I believe that was the last year that Prison Divest had a major win here in Portland, where they got the city of Portland to divest from private prisons, which means that they're no longer getting investments from people who have ties to like groups that are working for prisons for profit. Basically, people who are capitalizing and making a lot of money off of criminalization, particularly in Black and Brown communities. And when I say criminalization, that's, you know, any activity that any random person might do suddenly, because a marginalized community or person does it, it becomes a crime or an issue. And so I think that the divestment that happened here last year predates my time at Enlace, and the main person behind that was my colleague Jimmy Trinkle, who has been with Enlace for 5 years. But for that campaign to get to that point, that was years and years and years of work. And I still believe is like one of the big wins for prison divest. It's the first city in the nation to do that. As well as to date, I think there's been about, well, maybe that was last year, about $4.1 billion that's been divested. So that's money that's not going to creating more prisons in our community. So that's super exciting.
Wonderful. I want to take a moment and announce something I just found today. This is in Seattle. It's a queer anti-militarism town hall, Monday, April 2nd. Participants and panelists include Dean Spade and Matilda Bernstein Sycamore. Both folks who have been on the show, both are wonderful and brilliant and do great work. So that's let your Seattle friends know, or heck, head up on April 2nd for the Queer Anti-Militarism Town Hall, and there are other folks involved. Let's go back to Enlace and the We Rise program. How many folks participated last year?
So last year was, I believe, about 15 mm-hmm. participants. So this year we're aiming for about 20. Usually with our programs for Enlace, at least the programs that I like to, I'm leading that work, so I like to keep the cohorts on the smaller side so that there's more opportunity to build like those really, really strong relationships that we're talking about. So this year, like I was saying, there'll be about 20 people. And for me, as like a trans and gender nonconforming person, it's always important to have like at least 30%+ trans participation in these programs, which is just a core value that we kind of have at our work in Enlace. If we're, say, we're going to, you know, make this program for trans and GNC folks, we're going to do the work to make sure that they are at the table and in the room. Mm-hmm. So,
is there something that you bring as a facilitator to We Rise trainings that's really sort of what's most special mm-hmm. about what you want people to engage with you on?
Yeah, I think that uniquely, I think that I bring the perspective of somebody who's not from here. You know, coming out here, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but, you know, frankly, there is a lot of abundance out here for these type of programs and things like that. So, you know, moving out of a place of scarcity into a space of abundance, you know, it just gives me that much more appreciation for the spaces that we hold and that we have. I think something specifically unique about like the work that I do is that, you know, I've done a lot of campaigning work around getting protections for trans and gender nonconforming city workers across the nation. As somebody who's literally been fired after coming out as trans, mm-hmm. you know? And so honestly, that was the catalyst that got me into organizing. It wasn't like I didn't go to school and like major in anything to do this. This was literally, I was organizing for survival, you know? So I think that that is a very unique, you know, something that I bring to the work that I do, just because for a lot of folks, I've heard that like activism can be a hobby or it's just something they do, you know, where a lot of the folks, especially trans and GNC, especially like Black trans women, like, you know, folks are organizing to live. They're organizing because they don't have things that they need and nobody's going to give it to them. So they have to create that space for themselves. And this is kind of starting to feel like one of those spaces, at least for me, just because, you know, because of the demographics here, and even being a minority within a minority, you know, it's hard to find our people sometimes. And it's really great that, like, you know, me being a person who I am can hold this space for other folks to come in and bring their full selves into a space and not have to leave anything behind. And part of it too is like, this is a journey for me as well. The wellness and healing stuff that we're working on, you know, is not like something we just kind of put on the back burner. It's something that is really important for all of us, myself included, and is a journey that I'm on myself. So I'm doing healing work on myself and as well for my community. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that healing work look like?
Yeah, it's really intense. I definitely have to credit, you know, my organizing family back home in Atlanta, Georgia, SNAPCO and RJAC, as well as in LASE for bringing me to the path of generative somatics. And I don't know if folks have heard that. I'll try my best to explain it, but this is like the joke with people that do somatics is that like nobody can really explain it. But it's a politicized body approach to healing and wellness. I don't know. That was like, that's the best I can do, unless we're going to be here all night. So, but yeah, somatics is really about not responding to trauma and conflict the same way, in ways that maybe had been used for survival in the past, you know, and thinking more about getting out of a survival mode into a thrive mode and figuring out different ways to respond to things from like the body perspective. So, you know, before I, you know, just pass out from exhaustion, like there are things that lead up to that that I can take stock of if I'm actually being conscious and being in my body instead of focused externally or in my head. So, somatics is part of that. I'm starting work with a healer, a local healer named Kiran Bhatti, and she is amazing. Like, she's just really, really good, and is going to be helping me do some like meditative work, as well as figuring out some goals for around like wellness and healing and what that looks like for me in particular. But even at a level of just in LASE, and I have to applaud them because it's rare that most organizations take this type of approach, but they are really, really dedicated to making sure that burnout doesn't happen with their organizers. And so that looks like we take a lot of walks and breaks throughout the day, encouraging each other to use like in vacation time, like in times of strife or, you know, if people are having like days where they just can't come in, there's mental health days for that. And, you know, they also, like I said, are the ones that brought somatics into our organization. And it's had a really, really profound impact on the way that we interact with each other and show up for each other. So
wonderful. We've been talking with Babatunde Asabuke of In LASE's continuing its program called We Rise, Training for Liberation and Healing. Tell us again where folks can find information.
Absolutely. Folks can get information. If you would like to apply for We Rise, you can go to info@enlaceintl.org. Or if you would rather call, you can call 503-295-6466. If nobody answers, just leave a message.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Yeah. We're going to hear some music in just a moment. This will be Sheila and B Devotion. This track, Spacer, is probably our theme song. We keep hearing the song in one iteration after another. After that, we're going to come back with Dominic Lopez of Basic Rights Oregon to talk about the upcoming Queer Town Hall. Welcome back to Preference, folks, here on KBOO. This is Alan, your host. You can also call me Hedda. We were hearing just now Sheila and B. Devotion, Spacer. That was a prominent track in the 70s and 80s Euro space disco scene. That's what it was called. We have Dominic Lopez on the line. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Hey there.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you're an organizer with Basic Rights Oregon. Is that right?
I am, yes. I manage the organizing program here at Basic Rights Oregon.
In a broad sense, tell us what Basic Rights Oregon is up to these days.
Of course. Well, for those who haven't heard, Basic Rights Oregon is the state's largest LGBTQ advocacy organization. We've been around for about 21 years, so we're drinking age. We were founded in the mid-90s as an answer to really just the endless assault of anti-LGBTQ ballot measures. Listeners might recognize things like ballot measure 9, 13, 36, all measures designed to take away from the LGBTQ community. You know, ever since then, Basic Rights has been working hard to make the state the pro-equality state that it is. And in the last couple of years, we've really found our focus advocating on behalf of transgender communities in the state of Oregon, as well as LGBTQ people of color, including immigrants and refugees. We also have a pretty large statewide presence and support the needs of LGBTQ youth.
How does that play out around the state?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of a twofer, really. So the first thing is when we hear of situations that are taking place in any corner of the state where the rights of LGBTQ people are being infringed on or are being attacked, we respond as effectively as we can. A couple of years ago, actually, this was a fairly high-profile case in Dallas, Oregon, west of Salem. There was an instance where a city councilor said some really awful homophobic and Islamophobic stuff on his Facebook page, and we proceeded to interact with the community and make sure there was a direct response to the city councilor's really awful statements. And then things kind of escalated, and a group of parents in the area, backed by an out-of-state hate organization, worked to try to make it impossible for a transgender student at Dallas High School to access the appropriate restrooms. Basic Rights worked really hard with local community members to make sure that that student had the right to the access the appropriate restrooms, and we actually worked with the state of Oregon months later to create a permanent rule that protects the right of all students in the state to have that access. So it's like one good example of statewide work. Beyond that, we host our annual statewide leadership summit, bringing folks from every corner of Oregon to gain hard skills to take back to their communities. And we try to host most of our events online. The Queer Town Hall actually is a good example. It'll be on webinars, so folks that everyone across the state will be able to participate and even ask questions remotely.
Wonderful. Before we talk about the Queer Town Hall, what other kinds of events has Basic Rights Oregon been transmitting online? I'm very curious about that.
No, for sure. So our first real run of the thing was about this time last year. We've had this annual event or informational session called the Trans Healthcare Forum. For those who aren't familiar, healthcare for transgender people is a really difficult prospect, right? You're dealing not only with insurance companies that don't know that they're legally required to provide transition-related services so folks can affirm their gender identity. You're also interacting with health systems and care providers that simply don't know and oftentimes will either refuse service or unintentionally discriminate by calling someone the wrong name or the wrong pronouns. And so the Trans Healthcare Forum is a way for transgender people across the state of Oregon to get direct access to healthcare providers and experts and ask their questions, right? What do I need to say if my request for coverage is denied? How do I find a doctor or a therapist who is trans-affirming? How can I get someone to write a letter for me so that I can start getting access to my medically necessary transition? We had over 1,400 people following us on the Facebook live stream, and that was just our first attempt at using it, so we're really glad to be reprising that platform for the Queer Town Hall, and we'll also be announcing our 2018 Trans Healthcare Forum shortly.
That's wonderful. Do you have a sense of who will be participating in that town hall?
We're working on it now. I think a similar profile of folks, so you can expect to see representatives from major health systems as well as individuals from the newly formed Trans Healthcare Coalition. It's a really amazing group of activists that meets at the Q Center a couple times a month and really comes together around different issues that are facing the trans community in the context of healthcare. So we'll be working closely with that coalition to make sure that experts are in the room able to ask questions.
Wonderful. This coalition meeting at the Q Center, can you tell us anything about who's involved, when they meet?
Yeah, you know, I wish I had more information for you. Unfortunately, I'm not the individual on staff who reaches out. We have a staff member by the name of Chase, who's our transgender justice trainer and organizer, who attends those meetings. What I can tell you about it is that it is the first line of defense for trans folks who are interacting with the healthcare system. They're the ones that are attending meetings with state agencies to have rules updated to support the trans community, as well as doing the advocacy work inside of health systems, talking to doctors, talking to practitioners, doing the trainings, making sure that every time a trans person tries to go in to receive healthcare, that they're not the ones being forced to teach their doctor exactly what they need.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. So let's talk about Dominic, let's talk about Queer Town Hall, Politics at the Intersection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really, really excited for this event. You know, it came together just early this year. Our team was really looking for a way to make sure that folks in the Portland metro area, but most importantly LGBTQ folks who might not be able to make the trip to Salem, had access to their elected officials. We also happen to have a lot of really amazing electeds in this state. We reached out and were able to have 8 folks RSVP, 8 legislators, including all of the out LGBTQ legislators, as well as 5 other legislators of color. These are all pro-equality elected officials. I like to say, you know, we talk about accessing political politicians all the time, but these are the ones that are going to listen, right? These are the ones that come from marginalized communities themselves. They know what it means to experience oppression and discrimination. And so when we talk to them about our needs, they'll listen. They're the ones that are going to take things to Salem and make real change happen. And so we're really excited to be hosting this wide-ranging conversation for folks who attend in person and online.
Who's participating?
So I'll pull the list up in front of me real quick. So so we have what we like to call the Queer Caucus, which is Speaker Tina Kotek, State Representative Rob Noth, and State Representative Karen Power. Those are the 3 folks that are out and identified as LGBTQ in the legislature. In addition, there are 5 legislators of color. We have Representative Tana Sanchez, Representative Diego Hernandez, Senator Lou Frederick, Senator James Manning, who's actually driving up from Eugene. We're really glad to have him. And Representative Teresa Alonzo Leon from the Woodburn area. I believe I got all of them. But yeah, it's going to be a really great group of people. These are all folks, many of them new to the legislature, who bring some really amazing breadth of experience, really amazing policy positions. And you know what? It's really important to me that the queer and trans folks of color in the room get to see people that look like them in the front saying, we're the ones in charge.
So how can folks participate?
Of course. So the easiest way is just to pop over to basicrights.org and go to the events tab. You can RSVP on our website. You can also find it on Facebook if you just look up Queer Town Hall. We do ask folks to RSVP. It is a free event, but we just want to have a sense of how many people are going to be joining us. It's going to be at the Smith Student Union at Portland State University on Wednesday the 28th at 6 p.m. We've had a lot of folks sign up so far, so please do RSVP online. You can do it on Facebook or on our website, basicrights.org, so we can get a head count. And again, that's Wednesday, March 28th at 6 p.m. At Smith Student Union at Portland State University.
Wonderful. How much have you personally interacted with these legislators?
You know, I've had the good opportunity to interact with a number of them myself. I personally don't spend a ton of time in what we call the building or the Capitol building in Salem, though I will say I've been able to, interact specifically with Representative Rob Nose and Representative Diego Hernandez both regularly. Rob has been an absolute stalwart of the LGBTQ community. He comes from House District 42, so that's Southeast Portland. He was the one who most actively advocated on behalf of our bill in 2015 to ban conversion therapy, as well as our bill in 2017, which simplified the name and gender change process for transgender Oregonians. And then, of course, Representative Hernandez, Diego Hernandez, is a community activist. He's one of the youngest, if not the youngest, member of the legislature at 29. And I actually know him because he was a longtime coalition partner with another organization at Basic Rights Oregon who moved into the legislature. He represents a district on the east side. I'm not remembering the number right now, but east of 82nd.
Dominic, what would you personally like? And I think folks might get an opportunity to hear your thoughts on this at the town hall. And we'll give folks the details again on the queer town hall in just a moment. What would you personally like to see legislators in this state working on? On queer and trans.
That's a really good question, and twofold. A big purpose of this town hall is to really help give us that direction, right? We want to make sure that the work that Basic Rights is doing is community-focused and coming from the grassroots. And so when we bring together a room full of 200, 300 LGBTQ Oregonians and they start asking questions of their elected officials, I think that's going to give us at Basic Rights a good sense of what folks are thinking about, right? What do they want to talk about? Do they want to talk about guaranteeing the right to health care in Oregon or securitizing our laws around non-discrimination? Are we going to talk about revenue reform? There's a lot of things that can be brought up. Another thing that Basic Rights is doing to make sure, and this is just an aside, we have a transgender leadership development program called Catalyst. There are 20 transgender folks from across the state of Oregon who met actually literally this last Saturday to discuss what kind of policy changes they would like to see in the state of Oregon. And we're going to work closely with that cohort to help decide our policy landscape for 2019. But back to the town hall, my intent is really to, not only for Basic Rights to see that, but for the legislators to see it, right? I want them to experience that groundswell from their constituents, and not just their constituents, but those constituents in greatest need, those LGBTQ people who do still experience discrimination and harassment in the state of Oregon in a variety of ways at all sorts of intersections. I want them to see what those folks are going through and what they need. And that way, in the next legislative session in 2019, when I show up at, I'll pick on Tina Kotek, Speaker Kotek's office, I can say, you remember the Queer Town Hall, you remember what we talked about. What are we going to do to support these individuals and their needs?
Tell us a little bit about this group, Catalyst.
Of course, yeah. Oh, this is so cool. So Basic Rights hosts actually two leadership development cohorts. Catalyst is specifically for transgender people. It's a multi-generational cohort. Participants everywhere from the ages of 18 to 67 from across the state of Oregon. And we also host the development program Our Families, which has been around for actually quite a few years now, which is specifically for queer and trans people of color and hosts a very similar intent to build the leadership of these communities. These are folks that are routinely driven out of opportunities for growth and for experience, for professional development. They have a hard time landing jobs, sometimes having a hard time just making ends meet. And so this program is provided free so that they can get that information, get access to people in power. We teach them how to build campaigns. We teach them how to speak in public. We teach them how to build community and fundraise. And our intent is once they've graduated from the program that they can go sit on boards, get jobs doing advocacy, and genuinely not just make the world a better place for them, but stand as leaders in the LGBTQ community.
Yeah. Dominic, how much does Basic Rights Oregon study what works in other states?
We do. It's a bit, I'm getting a lot out of the word twofer tonight, but it's a bit here and a bit there. There are certainly states, I would say California and New York are both states that have pretty significant advancements in their own LGBTQ policy. And so we will often look at them to see what kind of stuff they've drugged up and how we can support them best. And then also basic rights in Oregon, we're really on the cutting edge, right? We were one of the first states to ban conversion therapy. Washington State just did it a couple of weeks ago. And so a lot of the time we're the ones coming up with the new ideas and saying, what's this cool thing that we can do here? What's this standard that we can set?
Tell us about that ban on conversion therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2015, we came together with a coalition of individuals and organizations to begin advocating to ban conversion therapy for LGBTQ minors. And so conversion therapy, for those who aren't familiar, is, well, you know, they talk about praying the gay away or sending kids to anti-gay camp. That's basically what it is, right? It's an incredibly discredited practice where somebody is compelled to try to learn to not be LGBTQ. It doesn't just not work. It actually does real active damage, right? We're talking about increasing the rate of suicide amongst youth that are subjected to this. We're talking about people being removed or disowned by their families. It's really horrific. And so in 2015, we worked to pass a bill that banned the practice. Now, if a therapist or counselor in the state of Oregon performs conversion therapy, they'll have their license revoked. It's illegal in the state of Oregon. Because it's not just, again, it's not just a practice that doesn't work. It's a practice that does actual harm.
Indeed. I believe we talked about it on the show a couple of years ago. I have no idea whether they're still headquartered in Clackamas, but there's a group over there that promotes and possibly engages in conversion therapy. Are you familiar with those folks?
You know, I can't say off the top of my head whether I am familiar. I will say one thing about the law. It is specifically for minors. So if an adult, for whatever reason, wants to submit themselves to conversion therapy, that's their right to do so. Obviously, it's highly discouraged. And so I imagine if this organization still exists, then they would only be able to do it on adults who are choosing to undergo it themselves. Still a really unfortunate situation.
Indeed. So, again, you said the law banning conversion therapy only covers that for minors. Is that right?
Correct. So individuals of age 18 or below cannot be compelled to undergo conversion therapy. And providing conversion therapy to someone who's 18 or younger, it can be grounds to have your license dismissed.
Well, that's a start.
It is. And this is, I think, one of the things that really drives us here at Basic Rights Oregon is we've done a lot of really good work here, and we've been able to make a lot of important gains. But quite frankly, there's still an incredible amount of work left to be done, right? We want to expand that age for conversion therapy. We want to make sure that trans healthcare is a right here in the state of Oregon, and not just and not something that sits in regulation like it does now, which is important. But we want to take it further, right? We want a paid family medical leave package so that if you're sick or a relative is sick or someone who's part of your chosen family is sick, then we can make sure that that you have some sort of payment for that for your lost time at work while you take care of them. There's so much work left to be done here. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back, Dominic, and give us the details on the upcoming Queer Town Hall mm-hmm. with local legislators.
So again, the Queer Town Hall is going to be on a Wednesday, March 28th. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Portland State University. And it's going to be in the Smith Ballroom, which I believe is on the fifth floor, but we'll have some signs there as well. And you'll also be able to keep track of it using Facebook Live. We're going to be taking questions via email between now and the Queer Town Hall, and as well as on Facebook Live during the event itself.
Well, that's pretty wonderful. The ballroom was where... I think it's where the BSU's queer prom is held, or has been for a good number of years
awesome.
In the past.
Yeah, we've been able to partner with BSU many times on some really great program. We're really grateful to be working with them again on this event.
Dominic, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
We're definitely We're definitely going to be on hand for the Queer Town Hall. Folks, RSVP ahead of time to get your spot. March 28th is the town hall. And we're very grateful for your conversation with us today, Dominic.
Of course, and thank you so much for having us. We're really glad to be working with y'all, and we're excited to be putting this event on.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Hard Knock Radio comes up next at the 7 o'clock hour. We have Kayla, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Wonderful. On the telephone with us. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kayla Camelli. I work for a local nonprofit called Emerge Safe Now. We provide equity-based trauma-informed violence prevention for the community.
Kayla, what does that look like? Generally speaking, what is that?
Generally speaking, I think what makes our organization unique is that we prioritize care defense, and we understand that the first level of self-defense is loving yourself. So a lot of what we do is trauma-informed. We recognize that anybody in our programs or workshops can be a victim of violence, and we create a space that's safe and comforting for those people.
And what sorts of specific events does Emerge Safe Now put on throughout the year?
So throughout the year, we mainly do community workshops on weekends, and then we're also in a couple elementary schools around Portland. Our upcoming workshops, there's a self-defense workshop for the LGBTQI community this Sunday at Northeast Community Center. And then we also have a self-defense workshop for people with different abilities, and that's going to be April 22nd, and that's going to be in Northwest at the Friendly House.
Now, is the Northeast Community Center, is that the same spot as the Hollywood Senior Center?
I am not sure. I actually don't know where the Hollywood Senior Center is.
The address is very close, but I didn't have a chance to go and look that up specifically. Either way, you're close to Trader Joe's. So let's talk about this workshop this Sunday. How do folks participate?
Yeah, so right now we have a lot of openings, actually. If that interests you at all, we have a website, emergesafenow.org. Also a phone number I can give later, but we have a sliding scale fee and scholarships available. We ask $30 as a fee, but if that is If a participant can't afford that, we totally understand, and we want to make our services accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that the LGBTQ community experiences violence at a higher rate than their cisgender peers. And I think, and that's why we want to give to that community, especially if it's something as important as physical and psychological safety. We think that the whole being is important, and that's what we want to share.
Yeah. What is the psychological component of self-defense training? What does that involve?
Yeah. So the care defense is our first priority. And that has a lot to do with self-esteem. We know that if you don't feel happy about yourself or feel that you are worth protecting, that somebody won't do that. So the first thing that we do is we do a lot of positive affirmations. We have our participants find something that they like about themselves, write it down, tell it to themselves out loud, because we know that a strong brain will help protect a strong body.
Mm-hmm. Someone punched me in the face on the bus not so long ago. And it came out of the blue. It was, it was totally unexpected and uncalled for. But there was that moment, when I could see his fist coming towards me, but didn't have any, I knew it was going to happen, but didn't have any, ability to make something happen for myself in that time, because I hadn't been prepared. I hadn't thought about what unexpected violence would look like. So I didn't have any sort of mechanism for responding to it as it was happening.
Well, I'm sorry that happened. That sounds very scary, especially if it was unexpected. But we do talk about safety on public transportation. That actually is a pretty big draw for a lot of our participants. They in the beginning of the session, we'll host a listening session and kind of ask the community what they think is important to go over. So it's not a cookie cutter curriculum that we deliver. We kind of ask the group what they want to learn and what they think is important and go from there. And public transportation always seems to be at the top of the list. And we do cover ways to stay safe on public transit using your other senses, like seeing things, hearing things, responding that way. And then our last resort is physical self-defense, which we do teach a couple of techniques.
Wonderful. We just have a few seconds left, Kayla. Do you want to run down the info for how folks can find information on this Sunday's self-defense class for LGBTQI folks?
Absolutely. Our phone number is going to be 503-498-8452. And then we also have our website that's going to be Emerge Safe Now, which is emergsafenow.org.
Wonderful.
And all of that information will be there.
Yay, wonderful. Yeah, that's this Sunday, EMERJ, Safe Now online. Thanks so much for joining us, Kayla.
Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome. Hard Knock Radio is up next. This has been Preference. Thanks so much, everyone.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Limp Wrist. Live Friday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Bossa Nova Ballroom, 722 East Burnside Street in Portland. Limp Wrist, four unruly lewd queens playing hardcore call for all dykes, rough girls, sissy boys, trans folks, leather teos, fierce queens, punks, the non-defined and the questioning, to come get loose at their only Northwest show. Also playing are Xylitol from Olympia and Portland's Labinden Toten and Petite. Again, that's Limp Wrist, live Friday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Bossa Nova Ballroom, 722 East Burnside Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.